I'd have a tough time giving it a passing grade.
And that's because?
Well, several things. I think the the topic of intelligence and secrecy is a tough one, and in the end, I wasn't sure that the authors really proved their thesis.
And the thesis generally, as we've been talking about it the last couple of weeks, essentially that the intelligence community almost, we always talk about too big to fail, it's almost too big to succeed.
Right, and that's premised on, I think their argument, their series is really premised on an argument about effectiveness and a kind of equating effectiveness with efficiency. And I think when it comes to national defense, when it comes to intelligence, effectiveness doesn't necessarily equate to efficiency.
My sense in reading it and reading your piece as well, post 9/11, of course, everyone went, oh my goodness, how does this happen? We don't want this to happen again. And then we started throwing a lot of resources to fix what were perceived, real or perceived holes.
Well, I think that's right. We started throwing resources at the problem for a couple reasons. First, because the U.S. intelligence community experienced a downturn in the 1990s for understandable reasons with the end of the Cold War. And I think in some cases we were trying to buy back resources that we gave away in the 1990s. And I think we also threw resources at the problem because we were underinvested in intelligence having to do with terrorist groups such as Al-Qaeda. And I think, you know, in government, as with business and as with our private lives, when you try to buy back something that you've given away or buy something that you need that you don't necessarily have, you pay a premium for it.
And you actually, you argue that, yes, there may be a lot of different parts and overlapping parts of the intelligence community. But that's almost, in a certain degree, by design. You want that to be the case.
Well, at least, you know, generations of American leaders have wanted that. I think the overlapping jurisdictions, different looks at the problem, that was built in consciously to the design of the U.S. intelligence community when it was formed in the 1940s. And it's been a distinguishing feature of that community ever since. Again, back to the argument about effectiveness versus efficiency. We've tolerated some inefficiency in the hope that it'll avert surprise attack and save American lives.
And you discuss, and they discussed a little bit, the Undie bomber, or whatever we're supposed to call him now, and how that played. It's largely seen as a failure. Part of my frustration often is, in hindsight, we see these things as failure, and there's now just so much information that the intelligence agencies have to cull through. They have to find that one piece of relevant, or a couple of pieces, and connect all those pieces and make sense of it. Hard to do.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's why surprise attacks happen. And I think, you know, in coming months and years and decades, we'll know more about the underwear bomber and exactly what information was available to whom when, and you know, why we weren't able to connect all the dots. But the fact that we weren't able to connect all the dots is not surprising. Surprises happen, and I don't say that to be complacent, but just to realize that it is a very hard problem, particularly when folks are out there trying to deny you information and trying to deceive you.
And what's interesting, at least to me, is as there are more data sets, and there are so many data sets these days, it's almost become more difficult.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Roberta Wohlstetter, who was a great scholar of surprised attack, wrote decades ago, you know, that the problem was not the trying to find the signals, but the sea of noise that those signals floated in. And if anything, there's just a lot more noise out there, and there may be some more signals, but just a lot more noise.
I got to tell you, as I reread the piece again, though, one of the things that did really surprise me still is the defense secretary, the head of the CIA, not really knowing how many people, how many companies, not having data, that kind of data kind of surprised me.
Well, I think, you know, Secretary Gates said he had a difficult time getting his arms around it. I don't think he said that he couldn't. And certainly at the individual level, sure. I think we do know exactly how many individuals have security clearances, because security clearances are granted on an individual basis. Similarly, you could figure out just how many you know, classified contracts there are, and so forth. But it's true, there's a lot of classified work going on. But again, that shouldn't surprise us. You know, we're in a protracted conflict with an adversary that is trying to avoid detection. And a lot of what we need to do to detect that adversary is classified by its nature.
So, are there any positive takeaways from this series? Did they move the discussion at all?
Well, I think whether something positive comes of it or not will really depend on how legislators and those in the executive branch deal with these issues. The Congress has oversight responsibilities, and they'll have to determine how well or poorly they're doing in oversight. I mean, there are people who track these matters. I think the public does certainly have a right to know, and from that perspective, I think that Priest and Arkin did some good investigative journalism. I just have difficulty giving it a passing grade in the end.